there has to be no stimulation. You're not watching porn. You're not making love. No physical contact, because we want to eliminate the variables. Just how long does it take to go down? And we wanted men who were not taking medication as well too, because that would be another variable. Although we did allow alcohol and marijuana, because reality is too many guys are dependent upon that or want that to maximize their pleasure. So with nothing, it was 45 seconds for an erection to go away. Then we had men take tadalafil, which is one of the PDE5 medications, like Viagra, but long acting, 10 milligrams. And the erection on average lasted just a little bit over 2 minutes afterwards. And then we had people use our performance ring, and it was about 4 minutes. And then I use our ring plus tadalafil, and the erection lasted about 5 minutes and 45 seconds on average.
Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. Welcome back to the Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators podcast. Today we have Dr. Elliot Justin joining us to talk all about erection quality. And I'm really excited to have this conversation because I think so often women are concerned about the erectile quality and concerned that it's something they may or may not be doing. So I'm really excited to dive into this and talk more about how that can impact men and what we need to know as women about erections. So a little bit of background about Dr. Elliot Justin. He is the CEO and founder of Firm Tech, the first sex tech company dedicated to improving men's erectile fitness. He has a background in emergency medicine and healthcare technology consulting. Dr. Justin is also a serial healthcare entrepreneur and has found and sold multiple different groups. So I'm so excited for you to join us to dive into this. So let's just start with talking about what is an erection and how does it physiologically happen?
Well, thanks for the bio, but I missed the question, but I would like to make 2 points. One is, as an emergency medicine physician, I can assure you that they're short of a heart attack or a stroke. There are almost no emergency that concern a man as much as a limp dick or his partner. And the other is, we're not just now focused on men, we are focused on women. And later on, I can tell you about the tracker for the roller arousal that we've tested now on 38 women. What was your question again?
Yeah. So how does an erection physiologically happen? Like, what's going on in the body?
That's a great question, because we really don't know. Several years ago, I collided with a tree while riding a horse. I did shatter that tree into pieces. I broke 6 ribs and 6 vertebrae, and I performed an important sign, which I'll tell you in a moment, which works for both men and women. If ever you think that you've broken your spinal cord, I call it the cock-up sign, just to be catchy. But if you cock up your big toe, you can then perform the big three. You can urinate, defecate, and you can fornicate. Very reassuring if you're worried about the spinal cord. So the thought with erections is, and that got me really interested in studying what was going on for erections. The thinking is that the cavernous nerve, which is everyone's favorite nerve that no one has heard about, if you stimulate that nerve is what's necessary to produce orgasms in men and women. And there were 5 papers claiming by urologists that through stimulating that nerve in men and women with spinal cord injuries or multiple sclerosis, they were able to produce orgasms. I then tried to reproduce those experiments on myself. I called it Project O for obvious reasons. Well, first, before I tested these neuromodulation myself, I tried out on 2 rams, and we produced weak erections and ejaculation in 2 rams by stimulating nerve. But we also got defecation and urination, so it was not bedroom friendly. I then decided to test it on myself and by planting an electrode. So imagine like a cardiac pacemaker being planted in the heart and to control the nervous system of the heart. So whether you're high on crack cocaine or you just meditate deeply, that pacemaker is going to keep on working. Matter of fact, it'll keep on working even after you're dead. To have that type of control over the cavities would be powerful for men and women, because it would mean that we could then have the sexuality of teenagers, for better or for worse. And it would mean that people with significant disabilities, people who are aging, would be able to continue to enjoy sex, which would be extremely valuable for people's physical and spiritual health. I had a urology friend implant an electrode by my cavernous nerve and no results whatsoever. But the thought is that in erections that we have, first you stimulate the parasympathetic system with various stimuli, and that the sympathetic nervous system, which is a fight-flight nervous system, that's what kills erections in men and women. And then the cavernous nerve fires, and then you can have an orgasm. I don't think we really know. Sometimes I like to imagine there's Aphrodite who's behind it, and that we just need to hit with the right arrow and it works. But the production of arousal, we understand, but what produces orgasms in men and women, we don't really understand. It's complicated, and it's frustrating because everything in the body involves electricity. So it's kind of a mystery. A system as complicated as the heart, we can take control of it over the heart by putting an electrode in an area of the heart called the atrium. We can then gain control over it, but we can't do the same thing for human sexuality.
That's so fascinating. And yeah, we rarely hear about this particular nerve being a part of erections and orgasm. When it comes to like the penis, we never talk about the penis on this podcast. Vaginas, vulvas, and vibrators. We're very focused on female anatomy. And so I'd love to kind of just break down like what is the parts of a penis and what is important about their function for erection?
Well, one way of looking at the penis is that it's an extroverted vagina and clitoris. So as we evolve in the womb, before we have stimulation of male hormones, if we happen to be cursed and be missing an X chromosome, have a Y chromosome instead, as the male hormones kick in, the penis evolves really from the same raw genetic material as the clitoris. So there are a lot more similarities than between the penis and the clitoris that, you know, that people imagine. So the most sensitive part of the penis is the head, and it's the same thing with the clitoris. But the entire the shaft of the penis, which is represented by the crus in women, is also sensitive as well. Another fascinating fact that I learned recently might be new to you as well, too, because I haven't found a doctor who knows about this. As the penis fills with blood, as it gorges with blood, it's contained by the epidermis. We have this lining of skin around the penis. And also bear in mind that 40% of the shaft of the penis is actually internal, buried behind the testicles and the perineum, where it can be palpated. But as most of the clitoris is actually hidden as well, too. So as the clitoris, the internal clitoris, not the head, not the button, engorges with blood, there's no epidermis around the internal clitoris. So what happens to that blood? Well, it turns out that most vaginal secretions are blood transudate. So like almost everyone, isn't that amazing? I mean, did you know that? I didn't know that. And so, you know, the thinking is that vaginal secretions are due to mucus glands in the vagina, and there are some mucus glands, as well as there are periurethral glands involved with G-spot ejaculations that also produce a mucus-like substance. But those things mix with this transudate from the blood to produce vaginal secretions. And the reason why women dry up as they get older or when they take medications, the same reason why men's erections get fucked up, because as we get older, our circulation deteriorates, we have less blood. The blood takes longer to get in there. But anyway, I drift away from your subject because I'm so eager to share that fact I discovered recently about transudates and the clitoris, the vaginal field, the transudate. So they have the head, the penis, that's the most sensitive part, the shaft, and then you have the testes, which are equivalent to the labia majora, and which are a secondary erogenous zone, just as the labia majora are a secondary erogenous zone. And the more blood that's contained in them, the more sensitive they are, they can be as well, too. And the blood in the penis enters through the penile artery, which is on the dorsum, the back of the penis. And then it returns the veins that are on the side of the penis. And that's where, where properly designed cock rings become more effective, because a good cock ring will not block the arterial flow, and it will only constrain the venous return. And the male orgasm, is involved with ejaculation. So how can you make a male orgasm more powerful? I mean, women have vibrators, and in my lifetime, vibrators have gone, mainstream. My mother's vibrator was, stashed away in the bottom drawer of a supply closet that she thought we'd never find. My wife, I don't know, has 5 or 6, probably, depending upon what type of stimulation that, she wants at whatever moment in her enjoying making love. My daughter takes them on dates. They've been mainstreamed. There's no shame associated with women anymore for the majority of people. And tens of millions of women in America, own vibrators, usually multiples. So with men, though, all we have is these, what do we have for men? We have these massive, strokers, look like you'd beat someone to death with. And there certainly are no improvements on what Mother Nature gave us, which are fingers. So how can you improve a male orgasm? Well, that can be done by putting a little bit of light pressure over the urethra. Because a well-designed cock ring or a skilled hand job, if you will put that light pressure, not choke it off, put that light pressure, because that will draw out the male orgasm. The longer the male orgasm is, the more profound the longer the ejaculation, excuse me, the more profound the orgasm is.
Ooh, that's such an interesting fact, and I've never heard that before. Yeah, how do you play with that?
Well, it requires a light touch. I mean, a lot of men don't know about it either. Guys, sometimes the same thing applies to women too. People get so wrapped up in their pleasure that they don't think about prolonging it. So it can be done with finger if you know the anatomy. So the urethra runs right along the base of there's a dorsum of the penis, and there's a base of the penis. It runs along there. A little bit of light pressure there. But again, this is where, a well-designed cock ring, which we have done, because we actually, we thought about this. At FirmTech, we first thought about making a cock ring that would not block the arterial flow in, but just constrain the venous return, because we wanted a ring that a man could put on discreetly. Not like, hey, I got an erection. Like a woman looking for a vibrator. Where'd that cock ring go? Where'd the vibrator go? You want something that people could put on discreetly, man, hours before sex, if necessary, not to interrupt sexual activity. And then all we do is the more blood is held in the penis, and a lot of cock rings can achieve this, the more sensitivity there is. But in order to achieve prolonging the orgasm, we set a goal we tested this on 6 men, and we kind of joke in the company that we're insensitive because we tested on 6 white men in Montana, happens to be where I live. But let's assume that these 6 white men between the age of 27 and 70, I was the oldest, who are representative of all men, and I'm certain they are. The goal was to increase the ejaculatory phase by 50%. Not to choke it off, because that can be uncomfortable, but to increase the ejaculatory phase by 50%. So my orgasm goes from 4 seconds to 7 seconds with our maximum performance ring. I still think it's because of the vibrator, but it's a lot better. And, my wife says she's glad the kids are out of the house because I'm now vocal. I, chew the pillow sometimes because the orgasm is that intense. And we've had lots of positive, comments from our customers about that ring.
Oh, that's so cool.
A good ring makes the man's partner, female or male partner, more confident as well too. Because what's the number one male problem during sex? That's a rhetorical question.
Maintaining an erection?
You got it. It's not getting it up. It's losing it. So the most common male problem is to lose it. It could be for a whole variety of reasons. It could be medications. The same medications that kill cocks also kill the clit. They're antihypertensives and they're SSRI antidepressants. Women also take hormones. It's a whole other problem as well, too. Those are the big cock killers. And there's alcohol, recreational drugs. Or it could just be something that someone else says. It could be that you're with someone who's new and you're not used to each other. Or it could be been together a long time and someone just pisses the other person off because, hey, they didn't do a chore. So all those things are erection killers. I mean, you got my first rhetorical question right, but you get my second question right. What's the number one complaint that men make that women do when they're really turned on?
My thought would be that they might clench or become too tight.
Nope, it's that they start talking about randomly about something else in their life. Suddenly, they talk about a fight they have with the kids, something went on at work, something that they can't, in order for them to proceed with their orgasm. They've got to get this thing off their head. And men laugh about this, especially married guys get together. It's like, can you believe what my wife said? She was so turned on that suddenly I had to hear about fights she had with her mother. I mean, my wife is in the room with me right now. We're partners. The other day, she started talking about redesigning a bedroom. That was a really good idea, really great idea. But had we been involved a long time without the ring, my reaction would have been WTF. You can't hold on to that thought for 5 minutes. But with the ring on, confidence builds for both of us. With the ring on, she can talk about anything. And now I'm like a 20-year-old guy with an erection. It ain't going away. The ring is also colder when people want to change positions while they're making love. Because a guy can lose his, or people want to take a break for whatever reason. Someone wants to get a drink. Someone's got to pee. Someone's got to whatever. Someone suddenly got an emergency text message. Whatever it could be. But if a man has an effective cock ring on, then it's a very, very different mindset.
Is there a length of time that it's too long to wear a cock ring for?
Well, conventional cock rings are made out of silicone. And they can only be worn for 20 or 30 minutes. They're uncomfortable and they pinch. So at FirmTech, the first challenge was we wanted to come up with a cock ring that would count the number of nocturnal erections. I didn't even know what that meant. I was, I'm back on emergency medicine doctor and a medical technologist, but a urologist 3 years ago said he wanted to come up with a way of counting this. And I said, what the fuck for? I mean, everyone knows about morning wood. We poke our partners with and we laugh about it. But the number of nocturnal erections is a leading indicator of man's cardiovascular, cardiometabolic health. By leading indicator, we mean that before a man has a heart attack or a stroke, that number will go down. This is really valuable for older women who, you know, men don't like to go to doctors. So one of the profound values of getting this kind of data, tracking their nocturnal erections, especially for women, if you want your partner to live and he has hypertension or diabetes, you want to be following the data and paying attention to the data, because that data is essentially life-saving. But if we're going to have a Kyle Cochran, then we want to count the number of nocturnal erections. By the way, women have nocturnal clitoral erections that are also significant, much less studied than men's are, and we're working on counting those. But if you want to come up with a Cochran that can be worn overnight, it has to be made out of a different material. So our rings are made out of a soft elastomer, not hard silicone. So our rings can be worn for hours and hours and hours because they don't block the arterial flow. The hard silicone rings choke off the arterial flow, so you can only wear the ring for 20 or 30 minutes.
That's so cool. If you ever need any volunteers for the one to wear for women, let me know. I would be very curious.
We are looking for testers. We talked earlier about the close analogy between the penis and the clitoris. So our thesis, and this hasn't been studied since Madison Johnson, and they were waking up women like every hour while they're sleeping and taking a look, and they were measuring clitoral arousal by the appearance. Is the tissue pinker, redder? You know, they get a little caliper out and trying to measure the external. They didn't even know about the size of the internal clitoris. They measured, you know, the external clitoris. So it's really interesting to be able to, you know, to get that data. And also, one, during sex, the female device measures the duration and degree of arousal as reflected in pulse amplitude, blood flow, and tissue oxygenation. So utilizing this data, women, just the way men can with our tech ring, women can measure the impact of diseases, medications, diet, exercise, supplements, recreational drugs, alcohol, relationships upon their sexual performance. It's going to revolutionize gynecology and sexology.
Yes.
And women have more problems because with my theory, it's not my opinion. Women have more problems because of medications. Why? Because premenopausal women take medications that men don't take. They commonly take birth control hormones for birth control, and they take many women, 20-25% of the adult population takes SSRI antidepressants. And those things impede sexual pleasure, sexual performance. And now if you have data, you can hack it, you can track it. You can hack it. I got that reversed. So you can measure it because our reactions are personal as well too. So it could be that you and I both have high blood pressure, and we take the same dose of medication, but it's having a different impact upon our sexual performance. Or it could be the two women taking, hey, I'm taking this very same birth control. I can't come and you can, but what's going on here? So the ability to get personal data involving everyone's most, really the vital signs of everyone's most vital organ, the penis or the clitoris. And then, you know, to be able to track it and measure what's going on with your medications or your relationships, et cetera, it's really profoundly valuable.
That's so interesting. And I know, like, for me, I have noticed personally that birth control absolutely kills my ability to orgasm. It makes it much harder to achieve orgasm. And then alcohol also makes it much harder to achieve orgasm. So it'd be so interesting to do some data and look at that. And I love data. I get my sleep data. I get all of that data. And I love talking about sex, obviously. And so data on my sexual performance or my quality would be so interesting. And then playing with it and like, how do you optimize it? How can you make it better based on really a science experiment with yourself?
Well, don't look to your doctor for help. We doctors are assholes. We don't even, I'm 70. I've never had a doctor tell me about the sexual side effect of medication or intervention. My wife is 70 years old as well too. She's never had a gynecologist or an internist say, hey, oh, by the way, this medication had this effect or that effect. Doctors treat sex like we're insane Puritans, like this is unimportant to people. Every other part of your body, from your skin to your heart, is more important than your sex life. And that's not the way people live.
Are you ready to start understanding yourself better, learning and recognizing your patterns, and really develop a relationship with yourself? If this sounds like you, the Unleashing My Power, a Women's Empowerment and Gratitude Journal is for you. This journal was specifically curated for women just like you to help you take back your power and develop and go to the next level in life. My friend Danielle and I created this journal because of our own experiences and what we were looking for in a daily practice to improve our connection to self and really become connected with ourselves. This is game-changing, and the feedback that we are getting from other women who have started using this journal is absolutely amazing. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to jordandanelle.com/journal, and it'll take you right there. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to go snag yours right away and leave me a review. Tell us what you think about it. Slide in the DMs. I know that your life will change when you start using this journal.
And it's not true. Like our sex life is so vital to our happiness. It's so vital to a lot of aspects of our life.
There is data confirming that women who don't take birth control pills are less likely to be depressed. Well, it's an association, but I suspect it's causal as well. And certainly, anyway, you mentioned alcohol. My erections lose about 10% firmness after the second cocktail, and I can track them. I started on a blood pressure pill. It made my erection 15% less firm. I didn't know it because what's the difference between this and this? It's not only 15%, but why would I take a medication that's having an impact on my second favorite organ, my brain? And you also mentioned sleep. The sleep specialists think that every episode of REM sleep in a man is accompanied by an erection. Is the erection a more accurate counter, if you will, of the quality of your sleep than a peripheral that you're wearing on your finger or your wrist? And I suspect the same thing is going to be true in women. I'm guessing, though no one has ever studied it, it will be studied next year utilizing our device, that every episode of REM sleep in women is accompanied by clitoral arousal.
Wow. There's just so much room for more research and more exploration in this area. Kind of want to go back to talking a little bit more about like what is normal for men. And I'm curious, we talked about how long normal cock rings or like silicone cock rings can be worn versus the femtech one. What is the normal length of an erection outside of using a cock ring?
How long does an erection last?
Correct.
Well, we know how long the average episode of penetrative sex lasts because people report it, and it's pathetic. What is normal? I mean, so we know the normal length of a nocturnal erection in a man who's healthy. In our data, it's running over 30 minutes. And that's obviously it's not, that's from stiffening, if you will, to loss of stiffening. I don't think there is such a thing as normal because it's so contingent upon stimulation, age, medication, drugs, how one likes to play it, play at sex. From my personal perspective, if I have an orgasm less than 30 minutes, I'm disappointed. An ideal orgasm for me is, 45 minutes, somewhere in that range. Why come faster? Why not take yourself to the edge, multiple times? I think it's different for women. Women can have more capable multiple orgasms than men. And what men are referring to with multiple orgasm is really an edging experience. And we end up in these definitional wordplay arguments about, what's an orgasm. I prefer to reserve orgasm for a man being climax. And you can see that since we're graphing the sexual experience, we can actually see what the climax is. But here's a sex tip. Because we got interested in looking at not tumescence, which is a technical word for arousal, but to climax, but detumescence. Because the more blood that's held in the penis, the more profound the erection and the more profound the orgasm. So what keeps a man the hardest the longest? So we studied 12 men, mostly white men in Montana again, but I think it's representative of all men. And we found that the other thing about detumescence is there has to be no stimulation. You're not watching porn, you're not making love, no physical contact, because we want to eliminate the variables. Just how long does it take to go down? And we wanted men who were not taking medication as well, too, because that would be another variable. Although we did allow alcohol and marijuana, because reality is too many guys are dependent upon that or want that to maximize their pleasure. So with nothing, it was 45 seconds for an erection to go away. Then we had men take tadalafil, which is one of the PDE5 medications, like Viagra, but long acting, 10 milligrams. And the erection on average lasted just a little bit over 2 minutes afterwards. And then we had people use our performance ring, and it was about 4 minutes. And then I use our ring plus tadalafil, and the erection lasted about 5 minutes and 45 seconds on average. Well, one, the male mindset is come and done. especially with these, with the old fashioned tight silicone ring, just get the thing off. You want to be done. And the mild male mindset after an orgasm is, did anyone text me while we were fucking? I want a drink. What are we going to do next? Or I want to go to bed. If a man is hard afterwards for minutes, well, for guys who have premature ejaculation, they keep on thrusting. It's comfortably hard. But the other impact is actually one of, it's hard to quantify, which is intimacy and romance. Because, I mean, my wife and I noticed it in our relationship. It used to be come and done. We're going to do something else. Whereas, because we're married a long time, she always comes first. It's just, you know, that's the way it is in most successful heterosexual, you know, relationships. If I'm still erect for 5 or 6 minutes afterwards, we're still engaged romantically. And that's really great. We're talking, where I'm still hard. She's, it's different, it's better. So my advice to men, if you want to have a better orgasm, get over your inhibition, put a ring on it, because straight guys don't do it, and take a medication, whether you have ED or don't have ED. Because the male mindset, the straight male mindset is, I don't need that. I'm good the way I am. Even though they often are not good the way they are, I'm good the way I am. And one of the jokes we have at medical conventions is, how do you tell the difference between a gay doctor and a straight doctor?
I don't know. Tell me.
Ask one question. Do you use a cock ring? Straight doctor. Oh, I don't need that. Gay doctor. Last night. Got a better one? So straight men need to be, just the way vibrators have gone mainstream, I would like to see cock rings go mainstream, because it's not a question. Yeah, there are men who need them. There are many men using our products who need them. They have bad diabetes. They have bad hypertension. They need to be have to be taking medications that have an impact on their sexual performance. But they make the experience better for all men.
For everybody, too, even for partners. Like, that makes the experience better for us as well. I'm also curious, you know, there's this thing that you always hear about online, and I'm curious if this is legit or bullshit. Blue balls. Are they real?
Yes, they are real. They become less with age. When I was 13 years old, I was crippled with them. It was horrible. You're making out with a girl, especially back then. There wasn't the culture then was very much kissing, don't touch below the breast kind of culture. And it was really maddening. I'd come home doubled over in pain. Now, I think guys can bullshit it just the way women can make up stuff as well, too. I think, but it is real. The pain is genuine. It does pass. It is relieved by an orgasm. And on the hand, I'm certain there are guys who dramatize it just to try to get laid. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, also, especially for teenagers, I think that it might be maybe more dramatized there. I see a lot less of it personally as I've gotten older. Definitely when I was a teenager, I think that it was maybe more common, and also maybe not knowing how to utilize other words and language to communicate needs. So then that just becomes like the go-to way to explain, like, I want to fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or make someone feel guilty about being, oh, you're a tease, as opposed to, no, she's just not ready yet. The 10 years are tough for everyone.
Yes, they are. So I want to kind of, again, circle back to men's health. Something that you talk about is venous leak syndrome. What is this, and how does that impact erectile function?
I'm glad you asked that question, because venous leak syndrome affects all men as they get old. So the urologists think about venous leak syndrome as something that people are born with. If muscles around the veins in the penis that hold the blood in the penis are weak, and there are men who are born with weak, smooth muscles, that's what urologists kind of think about venous leak syndrome. Then it's surgically corrected, or it can sometimes be corrected with a cock ring. But all men get it as we get older, as do all women get venous leak syndrome. So you're young, I'm old. If I sit on a plane, or your mother sits on a plane for 4 or 5 hours, our ankles will swell. If we dangle our arm over for a long time, the ring becomes tighter on our fingers. Why is that? It's because we have venous leak syndrome. The veins in our legs, the smooth muscle around the veins in our legs and our fingers, are not pumping the blood back to our heart effectively. They're weaker. And in addition to which, the blood vessels differ, with age, usually due to microcalcifications. So all men get venous leak syndrome as they get older, and all men would benefit from the mechanical solution, which is a cock ring. The PDE5 medications, Viagra, Cialis, they put more blood into the penis, but they don't keep it there. The more common problem in men is not getting blood in, unless you have severe diabetes or hypertension, which that is a problem, but keeping the blood in because we have venous leak syndrome. And then the venous leak syndrome, of course, is complicated by other factors, alcohol, drugs, anxiety, medication. You know, it's complicated, but all men get venous leak syndrome as they get older, and the solution is mechanical. So why be proud about it? Why look at a cock ring, a straight guy, and say, oh, I don't need that? Why not say, yeah, great idea. And this is where women need to take the lead, straight women especially, because men are afraid to introduce sex toys into a relationship for two reasons, pride, and also they don't want to be embarrassed and they feel it might be rejected. If a man buys a sex toy, common male complaint is, I bought a sex toy, we used it once, it went to the garbage. The wife buys a sex toy or a partner buys a sex toy, it gets used all the time. So women really rule in this area. And if cock rings are going to be mainstream, it's going to come about from women presenting to men as a something that makes sex better for both them, confidence enhancer. And once guys start to put a ring on, they don't have sex without it. I mean, I won't mention his name. The CEO of the largest sex toy company in the United States, he tried out our ring. Says that it was, if there's one male product that men should own, it should be our performance ring. And he says he doesn't have sex without it now. I never had sex with the cock ring till 3 years ago because I also thought, oh, I don't need it. And besides, they pinch, they're uncomfortable, made of hard silicone. You only wear it after 20 minutes, you want it off. But now I don't have sex without it because I can last longer, comfortably, and my orgasms are more powerful. And it makes my wife feel really confident. And the positions that we can have sex in that we gave up. Here's another factor that I would like to convey to your female audience. It doesn't really apply to you. You're young. But as there's a boredom factor in a relationship. So if you want to have a successful sex life with someone over a long period of time, you have to plan for pleasure. You have to make love in different ways. But you also need to use tools that will help. I'll give one example. After my wife climaxes, she really likes me to have sex with her from behind, to fuck her from behind. When she was 30 years old, I thought that was great. At this age, I've done that so many times that I'm bored with it. So how do we address that? Well, boredom produces the fading erection as opposed to venous leak. And also she's had three children. I don't get the friction that I need. I'm older. And I also, as we age, the nerves become less sensitive as well too. So I have these factors against something that I know that she loves, and I would get annoyed. You know, I don't like that position. You know, I'm going to want to change that position in a few minutes. But if I have the ring on, I'm like a 35-year-old guy with a 25-year-old guy with an erection. It's like, hey, I love you. You want to do this for 10 minutes? I'm not going to come in this position, but I'm going to stay hard. And that's really, so there are more conventional positions that we now make love in because of the ring. I never thought to come here. I thought I'm going to study nocturnal erections and the duration of firmness erections. But it's the impact upon the quality of lovemaking in my marriage is really, and the mutuality of lovemaking in our marriage is really profound. And I hear about this from customers, and it's really been really gratifying.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to date older men, so I have some experience in erectile quality changes. And I'm not in my 20s anymore, and I don't date younger generally. So definitely like notice a difference with position changes, notice a difference with, you know, I hear this from a lot of my friends, like if you're on top sometimes, that can be a position. I mean, everybody's different and we have our own positions that work best and also don't work best. I want to talk a little bit about responsive and spontaneous desire in men. Is that something that they also experience? I know that Emily Nagowski wrote a book, Come As You Are, and talks a lot about how it impacts women. But is that something that also impacts men?
Yeah, well, spontaneous arousal in men, physical arousal is uncommon after the teen years. I don't think women get this. I mean, guys don't, you know, I could get an erection just from brushing against someone's hand when I was 12 years old. I think even if the goddess Aphrodite showed up and was sitting next to me, that's still, you know, that wouldn't happen. You know, women like to say that their arousal is more psychological, but I think that's the same case for men as they get older. They really become, it's much more about the quality of the engagement, conversation, intimacy, trust, than it is about, gee, I'm going to get an erection because I'm in the school orchestra and I still remember her name. Her name was Arlene. I was in the flute section. She was in the clarinet section. She's wearing a miniskirt and I saw her panties and I get a hard on. That's, you know, that was then and now is now. the same 15-year-old girl could sit in front of me and flash me. And I'd be like, you know.
It's so interesting how we change over time and what we need changes over time. And we don't necessarily talk a lot about that. We don't talk about how aging impacts sex and what is normal and how it is totally normal that this happens.
Well, we also overemphasize penetration. One of the things that's interesting to me, and this is one of the ways in which we're going to change urology and gynecology at Femtech and the Femtech division, is currently when urologists, sexologists, gynecologists evaluate a woman for or man for sexual dysfunction, they have these subjective questionnaires. Well, they're bullshit. We want objective data. No, subjective questionnaires are focused on penetrative sex. And that's both the FSD, it's both the women for men. And that's, you know, not just from talking to my friends, but talking to my customers. It's not what's going on with people. You know, it's much more about mutual masturbation, oral sex as people get older. And intercourse might be part of what they might do in 20, 30 minutes in bed, but it's not how they finish. It's not how they start. It's not the focus. Whereas in porn and the way in which you talk about sex with each other commonly, it's about penetration, size of dick, tits, you know, size of the breast. We just talk about it so stupidly in comparison to what, you know, what people are doing and enjoying.
Absolutely. And I think it's so much more intimacy. It's not penetration. It's that connection that most people are really actually desiring.
Yes. When I prescribe PDE5 medications to men, they generally fall into two categories. One, they're guys my son's age who are, or younger, really guys in their 20s or early 30s, who are going off to a bachelor party in Las Vegas, and they want to, they know from going online that they can sustain erection longer and drink if they take Viagra or Cialis. It's true. True for me as well, too. But the other people are men in their 50s or 60s or 70s who are dating young women, and they're widowed or they're divorced or whatever. They only need one or two prescriptions and they don't need it anymore. But they never had ED. They just lack confidence. And I tell these guys, you're probably going to struggle to get up the first couple of times you go to bed with someone. And you should probably, and by the way, if you're dating someone experienced, they expect it as well too. It ain't like a porn movie. You see, you're 55 and she's 40. You're not leaving the restaurant, hiking up her skirt on the way to the ladies' room and banging her against the wall, because neither one is going to come that way. No one's going to be like some, you know, HBO movie. You're going to go home. She's going to push down the bed and jump, climb on top of your cock, and you're going to come. It's just that's not the way it is for people. You need to your point, you need to develop trust, and you need to be able to talk about what's going on. And then suddenly the problem goes away. There they are, the third, fourth, you know, night together. I just can't. This is such a common story that I hear from my friends, female too, that they're dating. You go, okay, the third, if it ain't happening on the third date, that probably is a problem, but it's probably not going to happen on the first date.
I've definitely noticed a difference with first time having a sexual encounter with somebody versus other times, that the ability to orgasm definitely changes, because it does, for me, depends on the connection, but also like when you meet somebody and you're experiencing something new for the first time, you maybe are not sure what they like, or like you don't have that. You don't know what each other want. And so it makes it really hard to have as highest quality possible interactions many times the first time.
Well, that's why it's so important for men to put a ring on it. Because it's so common for men that's experienced to get an erection and then to lose it because they're with someone, you know, who's new. And the ring is an obvious and effective aid, more effective than a pill. Again, my message to men and their partners is, if you want to have a better sexual experience, with or without ED, whether you've just gone out on the first date or you've had sex 1,000 times, 10,000 times, put a ring on it and take a PDE5 medication.
Yes, I love that. Before we wrap up this episode, I really want to talk a little bit more about when, as women, should we be encouraging our partners to seek medical care? Because a lot of times with erectile function, this is one of the first things that might actually show signs of something else going on. So when do we tell them to go see?
That is a great question. Thank you for answering, because that's really why I got involved with Femtech. I was unaware of the significance of nocturnal erections. And I'm not going to say it's to push my product, because what I'm doing is going to be copying other companies. We just have to be first. If a man is over the age of 40 or 45, and especially if he's diabetic or hypertensive, you want to know the number of nocturnal erections, and you want to track them just the way you would track your blood pressure, just the way you would go to a doctor and get an annual physical. Look, if a man went to an internist and said, "Yeah, I have chest pain," and they just listen with a stethoscope and says, "You're okay," did get an electrocardiogram or chest CT angiogram, you would think, "What the fuck is 1880?" And you know, if you went to a gynecologist and said, "Yeah, I have pain in intercourse," and they just stuck two fingers in your vagina and said, "Gee, Jordan, it's all in your head. No, you want an ultrasound." And maybe some other, other tests as well too. So now we have this tool. It's like an EKG stress test for the penis, and men can actually evaluate their nocturnal erections. But if they wear it during sex, they can measure the duration, the firmness of their sex erections, and they can then measure the impact of medications and diseases upon it. Any woman who's dating a man who's taking blood pressure medication, who's diabetic, they need to be thinking, if this guy's not getting up, there could well be a medical reason. Is the blood pressure controlled? Are they taking their medication? If they're diabetic, is their sugar controlled? If they just, this man just had a sudden weight gain, that's not normal either. And then there's alcohol and drugs and other things that enter it. Men, we are resistant to addressing our health issues in ways that women aren't. Men like to say that women are too sensitive about these things. They go to the doctor often. Men don't go to the doctor enough, and we need our responsible partners, our lovers, to help take care of us and pay attention to those factors. We've had women buy our tech ring, young women and old women, for that reason. We've had a guy in his early 20s who's struggling to get it up, incredibly fit guy. He and his wife wanted to have a child, and they were struggling to have sex. She got the tech ring, to our surprise, and she then discovered that he was taking testosterone and steroids for bodybuilding. But the problem was not stress, marriage, work, etc. The problem was in his drugs. We had a woman. I haven't heard of this problem. Have you heard of climacteria?
I have not.
Climacteria is when a man has an orgasm and he urinates. It's real common with men after prostate surgery. I never heard of it. We had a woman buy our ring, and now she can give her husband a blowjob. And also, he doesn't have to worry about him pissing in her vagina during penetrative sex. She sent us an email just, thanking us. I never heard of the condition. I had no idea that we'd be working on something that would, address, that kind of problem. So women really are the guardians to the large degree of men's health.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest takeaways from this episode is that women taking the lead on not necessarily men's health. I'm not adding any additional responsibility to women. And, we carry a lot of load as women already. Actually done some podcasts on that. But if you're bringing a toy into the bedroom, and I think that this option would be very, very helpful to collect some additional data to help have better orgasms for both partners, but then also really takes a look at health as well. And so, yeah, women, if you want to take the lead and get a cock ring from FirmTech, I think that is a really, really good choice. And yeah, I love it.
And the female device is coming too.
Ooh, I can't wait.
And that's going to be, again, a profound value, because if women can utilize technology to measure the impact of medication diseases upon their health, I mean, men are in bad health, women are in bad health as well, too, in terms of diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, atherosclerosis. And, this age of healthcare wearables, there's this gap, which is sex, and people develop positive relationships with the wearables. They follow their sleep data, their oxygenation, their calories. It's my hope that when men and women have wearables for their sexual health, they will have more sex and have longer, happier lives of lovemaking. They'll have a positive relationship with the devices that will inspire them to do better.
I love that.
And to keep doing it.
Yes. Before we wrap up, I always ask my podcast guests this question. How do you define pleasure?
That's a profoundly difficult question. The greatest pleasure, to my mind, is the combination of physical and spiritual intimacy with the partner. And yes, it does involve orgasm, but it involves so much more. It involves profound sharing of values and deep commitment. Before I got married, my wife said she wanted the freedom of a committed relationship. And like most guys, I thought, what the fuck is she talking about? The committed relationship. That's not, I don't associate that with freedom. Well, there is freedom associated with it, but really a committed relationship where you have a bind of spirituality, intellectual interests, aesthetic taste, and sexual pleasure is the most profound thing that I could experience. And my parents had a shitty marriage. I'm so blessed that I've been happily married for 35 years.
I love that. Where can the listeners find you at, and where can they find the cock ring from FemTech?
The company's FemTech. We have a FemTech division. We have two products that we're developing there. And that will be headed by Dr. Ashley Winters. But it's MyFirmTech, M-Y-F-I-R-M, MyFirmTech.com, MyFirmTech.com. And you can find me at Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at MyFirmTech.com. I communicate with dozens of people every day. And if you have any questions, not just about the technology, but about sexual health as well, I'm more than happy to interest them and to entertain them.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me about erections and all of this juicy stuff, and talk more about men's health, because it is such an area that is not talked about in women's spaces. And knowing that women are a little bit more proactive when it comes to men's health, I think that this is a really important conversation to be having. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Put a ring on it.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life, or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns, or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Donnell, go to coaching.jordandonnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode, and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again, and see you next episode.